Are you ready for the last ride of the season? We're venturing into the world of Imaginarium and the epic Song of Myself. All the elements of what I love about Nightwish.
Do you think you'll listen to some more Nightwish now?
Oh yeah, I love it.
I don't know what I'm listening to, but I like it.
Come on guys, don't let me down. Decades Tour 2, I want to see this one on the set list.
The podcast and the pendulum.
The podcast and the pendulum. Hello everyone and welcome to this, the final episode of season 3 of the podcast and the pendulum. My name is Simon. I'm sure you know that by now. How are you all? I hope that you're doing really, really well. Things have changed quite a bit since we started this season. Lockdowns have eased up and then tightened up again and then eased up again. My life hasn't changed too much, but my wonderful housemate, who actually went away in February with the intention of coming back in March, has only just returned last week. So it's so nice to have him back in the house. He is the man behind the graphics I've mentioned a few times, so it's kind of nice as well that I can just ask him to create me some graphics if I need them, because there will be a season 4 coming. I'm not sure when. And now might be a good time to actually say that, so I am going to have a bit of a break after this. I've mentioned a few times and I don't like to whine about it, because this podcast is my idea, it's my passion project. But when I started this, I really didn't envision how much hard work will go into it, particularly this last season, where I'm really proud of the way it sounds. We've got our cool intro. I'm trying to mix up the voices, getting guests in and stuff, and editing all that on my really, really slow old computer can take hours sometimes, especially because the episodes themselves are pushing over an hour now. I look back at the first few we did and they were like 20 minutes and I thought, oh yeah, that's a decent size for an episode. No, now we are pushing 45 minutes to an hour on each of them. So yeah, I am going to have a little bit of a break after this. I also want to get ahead, so I want to do some researching for the season 4 songs and try and find some interesting facts that I can bring to you on the next season. But reflecting back on this season, it really has been the season that I'm most proud of. Like I said, the quality I think is much better. I see a lot of people saying they're getting into the podcast and I think, oh god, they've got to listen to that first season where I really had no idea what was going on. I still don't really have any idea, but I do think it sounds a little bit better now at least. But yeah, thank you to anyone that has stuck with us. Kind of hard to believe it's been over 40 episodes now. And I hope that you have found them all useful. This season we had amazing guests. We had Edenbridge, Nemesis, Forever Still, bands that I really, really loved. Nemesis, for example, one of the first female-fronted metal band that I really got into when I was 16 or 17 years old. And that all came from a love of Nightwish. Nightwish really were the turning point for me. They introduced me to bands like Nemesis, like Edenbridge, and I guess eventually like Forever Still. So it's really nice that things have come full circle and now I'm going back on that and speaking to the bands that I've got into through Nightwish about their relationship with the band. It's also really fascinating to me because Nightwish are such a behemoth within the genre, particularly the symphonic metal genre. They really are such an inspiration for so many young bands coming up. It's really nice to see people like Diana van Gertsbergen, who is in Xandria and Ex Libris, talking about listening to them and really feeling inspired to get into music. And also Maya Shining from Forever Still saying a very similar thing. I think it's really, really interesting. And I'm so grateful to everyone that's taken the time to speak to me on the podcast. I hope that you've all enjoyed it. And thank you as well to people like my friends, Oha Cade, Alan, and the friends that are on today's episode as well, for taking the time to contribute and letting me know your thoughts about these songs, because it is really fascinating to hear different perspectives. And I like to give a bit of a summary of different songs, different viewpoints. I think that makes it a lot more interesting. But on to today's episode, I am leaving you with a bit of a bumper edition. So we're going to go into quite a few things. As I said, I've got some wonderful guests, including Oha Cade. He is back from Valcada. and my amazing friend Chris and Alan and Daniel. I'm recording this just before I've heard from Daniel, so I'm hoping that Daniel gets his bits in. But if not, all of the other guys are going to be speaking to me a little bit later in the episode. And we're going to be talking about Imaginarium. We're going to be talking about, of course, today's song, Song of Myself, and the usual lyrical analysis and all that good stuff. But I'm also going to be going into Annette. I really want to dedicate some time to talk about her contribution to the band. A really prominent part of their career, Dark Passion Play, coming off of that huge success that they had with Once, kind of reinventing themselves with a new singer, The Sound of Nightwish Reborn. There's a definite logic to that being the title of the EP they released. And Imaginarium, which was the ambition just enormous to have a film, but also the music itself, even if there was no movie involved, just the enormity of it, and the beloved classics like The Poet and the Pendulum from Dark Passion Play and Last Ride of the Day from Imaginarium. There's so much during the Annette years that I want to get into, and I want to understand what a special part she was of the band. I know a lot of people that really enjoy her voice, and see what she did later with the solo work and the Dark Element, which we've touched on a little bit in the Off the Album Path episodes. So we are going to be going deep into the archives regarding Annette and understanding her role within Nightwish during this era. So I think that is my intro speech out of the way. So for the last time this season, I'm going to say, let's get straight into it and let's talk about Nightwish and let's talk about Song of Myself. If we were to single out one inspiration for this song, the clue is in the title. Song of Myself is a poem by Walt Whitman. In an interview with Metal Shock Finland, Thomas spoke a little bit about the influence that he'd taken from what he calls his favourite poet. So the piece says, Imaginarium is a stark contrast to the anguished tone of its 2007 predecessor, Dark Passion Play. The shift is mainly due to Holopainen having read Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman, first published in 1855, and regarded as one of the greatest works in American literary history. Its famous poem Song of Myself spawned a 13-minute track of the same name on Imaginarium that includes 6 minutes of spoken verse. Many Nightwish fans purchased the book, wanting to experience the magic that had inspired such an epic composition. And while Holopainen is happy to be an ambassador for Whitman, he acknowledges that the text embodies a philosophy not everybody will embrace as wholly as he has. I've tried to tell people about Whitman, Thomas says. I've given Leaves of Grass as a present, and I've gotten really mixed responses. Some people really get it, and some don't get it at all. He really nailed the essence of existence, life, love, and beauty like no one ever before. It was like it was written for me personally, and I wish people all over the world would share the feeling that I had. Since reading Leaves of Grass back in 2006, Holopainen reveals it made him a much, much happier and appreciative person, a gift for which he is heavily indebted to Whitman. I wanted to do something similar without it being a rip-off, but the point is I just wanted to observe the world my way, as Whitman clearly did in his poem. Just write down the thoughts as I see the world, certain situations, occasions, happenings here and there, and just try and nail it and see what comes out, he recalls. Originally, it was about twice as long, so I had to cut it down as it would have been too much. Now I think it works. It has artistic value as well, and there are some moments that really work for me, like the girl that came to me in an elevator. Holopainen is referring to the girl in the poem with the green butterfly on her neck, admitting all of the spoken verse of Song of Myself is based on real life experiences. The encounter took place in an elevator in a hotel in far north Queensland, the last time he was in Australia, and that Holopainen is still moved by it is evident in the emotion in his voice and countenance. It was such a powerful moment, he reflects.
She came and she was really scented with too much perfume, and she was really made up. She really touched me because she started to talk to me, saying, I'm going to dinner and I'm going alone, as if it was because she was really, really big. And it made me feel really sad and touched at the same time. Such a beautiful moment. I was a stranger, but she started to talk to me. In an interview promoting Imaginarium with Metal Italia, Thomas also gushed about his love of Walt Whitman and what inspired Song of Myself.
Track number 12, Song of Myself, which is divided into four chapters. This is the epic one of the album. Gotta have one of those. You know, almost all the albums can't help it. And this is the ultimate personal catharsis of myself, highly inspired by my big literary hero, Mr. Walt Whitman, 19th century American poet. I just wanted to do something that would echo his writings. And yeah, I'm pretty pleased with the result. It's a nice ending for the album, especially the 6.5 minute long poem in the end, which feels like it's never going to stop. But that's the kind of feeling that we wanted to have for the part.
So who is Walt Whitman, this huge influence to this song and to Thomas? Well, I don't think I could possibly do him justice in just a few sentences, but I will try and explain what I've learned and what I know of Walt Whitman. So he is described on the Poetry Foundation as America's first world poet, and the Atlantic referred to him as America's first democratic poet. That same article discusses the free verse that he implemented in his poems. So rather than sticking to the standard rhymes and way of writing, he writes in a very fluid way. And you see that a lot in Song of Myself, which we will go into shortly, of course. But The Atlantic also says that the free verse he adopts in his work reflects a newly naturalized and accessible poetic language. Then and now, his poetry is for everyone. Now that is something that I think is still an important message today when it comes to poetry. I think poetry still is kind of put on a pedestal. People have so many misconceptions about it, including myself. Until I was in university and I really started to discover poetry, I had a complete misunderstanding. You know, a lot of people think it's just, it has to rhyme for a start. No, it doesn't. I mean, listen to, or rather read, Song of Myself by Walt Whitman, and you'll see that that's not the case. But then, almost because I think we think that it has to rhyme and it has to be in a certain way, when it's not, for a lot of people, I think it feels almost like lazy and kind of like it's lost its, like it's not doing the work, it's not meeting the requirements of a poem. So for me, the simplest way that I understood a poem is when I think of a novel, you can think of sometimes a whole paragraph or at least a couple sentences can describe one thing. And that is the beauty of a novel. It really gets you into that world and it takes the time to build the world, build the characters and build the story. In a poem, of course, I mean, Song of Myself is not the best example because it's really long, but a lot of poems are a lot shorter. And the attention to detail in a poem is just sublime to me. Not that that doesn't exist in a novel, but particularly within poetry, every single word represents something and it earns its place. There's no passengers in a poem. Every single word needs to work for that poem and for that message. And also the interpretation of a poem really is something. Again, just to compare against novels, because a lot of us consume novels, and this isn't true of all novels, but a lot of the time, you know, there's a story and they're trying to get you from point A to point B. And sometimes that just includes telling you basic details to communicate the story. They don't necessarily have too much meaning to them. Within a poem, for me, is very much about the meaning and what you're trying to convey. And one word can mean so many different things to different people. It can really steer you in a different path, in a different direction. And a couple of words or a stanza can have completely different interpretations from one person to the next.
So if you have ever felt like poetry is not for you, I really do recommend it. I always felt that it wasn't for me. I always felt it was quote-unquote too intelligent, like you really had to be a linguist to understand it. And just as they say in the Atlantic article, Whitman's poetry is for everyone. Of course, language has developed. He was a 19th century poet, and when you read his work, sometimes words don't make sense. If you do, because of this or because of Nightwish, go into Walt Whitman's poetry and particularly Song of Myself, I do implore you, if you don't understand a word, just kind of move forward and absorb as much of it as you can, because there's a lot going on here. It's in 50 something parts, and I listened to a audio version that spanned for like just under 2 hours, so it's an epic poem. It's huge. Although it can be a little bit daunting if you don't understand every single word, there is so much beauty that still is very relevant today. And of course you can Google all of the words you don't understand, but I do warn you, I think you'll be doing that a lot if you aren't a linguist, if you aren't familiar with that kind of language that Whitman uses. But one thing I did want to do after talking about Walt Whitman is to talk about Song of Myself. So as I said, I did kind of go into that song, the song. It's because it's called a song, but it's a poem. Yes, I went into the poem and I picked out some of my favourite parts. But truly, I do recommend that you go into it and see what stands out to you. It's a huge poem that I literally tried to absorb as quickly as I could in time to record this. And I picked out a lot of things that stood out to me, but I imagine the more you go back to it, the more you'll see. And chances are, these are stuff that I saw, Nightwish links, and I saw interesting things I wanted to mention. But there'll be stuff in there that really stands out to you in a way that it wouldn't to me. And there'll probably be links to Song of Myself, the Nightwish song, in there that I've completely missed. When you're listening to 2 hours of poetry and trying to really concentrate on it, there's so much that you can kind of pass you by. But here's a couple of lines that I did want to mention to you. So there's this one: "You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them for yourself." That is, for me, all about interpretation. And it's just what we just mentioned then. Not only Walt Whitman, but Nightwish and all art that we consume. It's about seeing things with your own eyes, from your own perspective of experiences and things that you've been through and things that you've discovered about yourself, about life, that helps you to read things in different ways. I always try and say when I'm looking into Nightwish lyrics in this podcast, that this is my interpretation, it's my opinion, because I think it takes something away if you are told this is what the song is about and this is all it can mean. It takes something away from the beauty of it. And I really like what Walt Whitman says there: "You shall not look through my eyes either." You need to see things yourself and you need to experience things yourself. Next, another line I really liked: "I believe in you, my soul. The other I am must not abase itself to you, and you must not be abased to the other." A lot of Whitman's work is about the union of the body and soul. I listened to an interesting podcast, which is actually a Christian podcast, but they also went into Whitman's work and Song of Myself. And they also mentioned, it was called the Selah Poetry Podcast, if you're interested. But they mentioned this importance of the body and soul, and how if you are indebted to your soul but not your body, you lose so much, because we experience everything through our body. And likewise, if you're not taking care of your body, you're not experiencing the world to its fullest. You know, if you're not being healthy, if you're not caring for yourself, there's so many experiences that you won't be able to have. But then the other side as well: if you are just about bodily pleasures, and if you literally just care about eating, drinking and procreating, like that's all you care about, there's so much beauty in the world that you will miss. And I like that comes quite towards the beginning of Song of Myself, and it really frames the entire poem, because it is really about things you experience, bringing them into your self, your soul, whatever you want to, and interpreting them as you would, and seeing things that you wouldn't necessarily normally notice. So the start of Song of Myself, Whitman is talking a lot about a single blade of grass and the beauty of, when I say the beauty of nature, it seems so enormous, but literally just, I mean, I'm looking around my house now, the intricacy of the leaves on my houseplant. There's so much that we become so used to and take for granted that sometimes it's really nice to take a step back. And it's easy to see that this is a bit of a revelation for Thomas, because I think it's a revelation for all of us. It's something, if anyone's done like mindfulness and that kind of thinking, it's a very similar idea there, in that it's all about being in the here and now and appreciating what you have and the sensations you're feeling, rather than worrying about the future and thinking about the past. It's about being here and now. And that's something that comes through a lot in Whitman's work. I also saw this, which I wanted to read to you and see if this reminds you of any other speakers that Nightwish have employed. I mean, that gives it away, doesn't it? But so the extract from the poem says, "And that all the men ever born are also my brothers, and the women my sisters and lovers, and that a calcine of the creation is love, and limitless are leaves stiff or drooping in the fields, and brown ants in the little wells beneath them." And then a little bit later, "The smallest sprout shows there is really no death, and if ever there was, it led forward life." Now, this was a really different time, and Whitman mentions a lot of references to God, and he talks about theism, which I think I'm going to mention a little bit later. I also found an extract I wanted to talk about, but that really reminded me of what Richard Dawkins is saying in his very secular book. And the quote that he reads on The Greatest Show on Earth, it's very much about the enormity and how small we are in comparison. I always remember what Dawkins says about the sand grains of Sahara would be outnumbered by the potential people. Like, that's really incredible. And that extract from Dawkins is very much about appreciating life and being here, and that's something that can absolutely be applied to this poem, Song of Myself, as well. Let me scroll down my notes. So there's also a part where it says, "A child said, what is the grass, fetching it to me with full hands." That for me mirrors the part in Song of Myself, "What is the colour of our lullaby?" There's an innocence, and Thomas always loves to talk about the innocence, but we see it a lot, of course, in children. And then the kind of naivety and innocent questions like that. What is the grass? What is the colour of the wind? Why is the sky blue? They're questions that can almost be quite frustrating because we don't have an answer. But what Walt Whitman, I think, wants us to do is kind of sit with those thoughts. And he goes into that a lot more. And instead of just saying, "Oh, I don't know, like the grass, I don't know what the grass is," he sits and thinks, well, maybe the grass could be this, or it could be that, or, and he thinks of all the different things and all the different metaphors that we could have for grass and what it could represent. Something very special. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to talk a little bit about religion, and I really like this next quote, which I will read, because for me, I read an article, I don't want to misquote it because I don't have it in front of me, but it kind of said about how Whitman was very curious about various religions, and I don't know that he subscribed to one religion. And that's something that really struck a chord with me, because I think it's something we see a lot, in that people, I'll speak for myself, I was Christian when I was raised, and there was never any attempt or effort for me to particularly understand other religions in depth. So a lot of people probably raised Muslim don't know the ins and outs of Christianity. A lot of people raised Christianity don't know the ins and outs of Buddhism, for example. And I really liked that idea of him wanting to explore, not kind of tying himself to the first religion or belief that he's given. But understanding, because there's so much beauty in religious texts. It's something we see from Thomas, who is openly secular. He really loves to use, or at least used to love to use, religious metaphor, and mention the stories, Gethsemane. If you go back to that episode, episode 2 of the podcast, we go into a lot of the religious references in there, because there's so much beautiful imagery and the metaphors in the Bible and in religious texts are so powerful. So it's not just because you don't believe in it. There is still so much beauty, I think, to be able that you can find from it. Of course, it's often tarred by the way people use religion in negative ways and use it to condone violence and war. But there is so much beauty. I mean, literally walk inside a church and look at it, and it will be hard to disagree with the beauty that exists within many religions. Anyway, I've spoken a lot, but the quote was, "My faith is the greatest of faiths and the least of faiths. In closing, worship ancient and modern, and all between ancient and modern. Believing I shall come again upon the earth after 5,000 years. Waiting responses from oracles, honoring the gods, saluting the sun." A little bit that I wanted to mention that also kind of echoed evolution and the themes that came through on Endless Forms Most Beautiful, which of course was the next album after Imaginarium. So it's a nice linear, logical route that you can kind of see Thomas taking in his writing. But there's this line from Song of Myself: "Before I was born out of my mother's, generations guided me." I've said that really wrong. I will say it again. "Before I was born out of my mother, generations guided me. My embryo has never been torpid, nor nothing could overlay it." Now, I mean, I don't want to go into that too much because I think it's quite obvious, but it's kind of looking back at the generations that came before us. A lot of parts of this poem is very much looking at the enormity of the universe of existence and realizing how small we are, not in a way to scare ourselves, but in a way to really provoke awe and how sublime everything is. I mean, if you have ever watched a documentary or even just a YouTube video, a quick thing you've seen on Facebook or Instagram about the size of the universe. My friend saw one the other day, and it really is awe-inspiring. If you see them compare our planet to, you know, the universe, the solar systems, and all that good stuff, it's just so, so sublime, and I find very inspiring. And I think I get that a lot from Song of Myself in the words that Whitman uses and the ideas that he brings forth. And then I want to finish on this part from a little bit later, or quite a lot later in the poem. This is towards the end, I believe. "And I say to mankind, be not curious about God, for I who am curious about each am not curious about God. No array of terms can say how much I am at peace about God and about death. I hear and behold God in every object, yet understand God not in the least. Nor do I understand who there can be more wonderful than myself. Why should I wish to see God better than this day? I see something of God each hour of the 24, and each moment then, in the faces of men and women, I see God. And in my own face in the glass, I find letters from God dropped in the street. And everyone is signed by God's name, and I leave them where they are. For I know that wheresoever I go, others will punctually come forever and ever." This is such a beautiful section of the poem for me, because in it, I feel like God is maybe used as a metaphor, or literally, it depends on your interpretation, but for beauty, for the sublime, for everything we just mentioned, for awe-inspiring sights. And Whitman mentions how we can see that, you know, instead of looking for something supernatural, something, a miracle, realize that there are so many miracles surrounding us every day. The beauty of nature, the accomplishments of mankind, there's so much to see. The complexity of people and relationships and love and feelings and understanding, not only the good feelings but the bad feelings and the way we react and the way our body grows skin over wounds and recovers from illnesses. And I just love that part because it very much is a for me, one of the most direct moments when Walt Whitman captures everything I feel he's trying to say in Song of Myself, which is look around and absorb what is around you because it is amazing and it is wonderful. After all that we've said about Song of Myself, you might be expecting the song lyrics to be overwhelmingly positive and beautiful and all about the wonders of life, but that is just an element of Song of Myself. The clue again lies in the name, Song of Myself. As people, we are not as simplistic as just one emotion or one feeling or one reflection on the world. Quite often it's more complex, and emotions and responses that we have to various things are always very varied. And being happy is as much a part of being human as being sad and being frustrated and being angry. And we see the full spectrum of emotion in the lyrics that Thomas puts forward. Even just looking at the titles of the sections of the song, so From a Dusty Bookshelf, that really centers this song in the Imaginarium world, which is all about imagination. It's almost like diving into a book or diving into the poetry of Walt Whitman. Or That Great Heart Lying Still. For that part, it feels quite violent almost, I want to say. The great heart feels huge, sublime, this enormous thing lying still, really placid. And then we get Piano Black. I think the whole section of that song is so melancholic, and it really feels that All That Great Heart Lying Still has the anger and the drive still within the person, within Thomas, whereas Piano Black just feels almost like resigned to life. And then we kind of come full circle with Love, which talks about, well, everything. It talks about the wonders of the world. It talks about the sadness that exists, the happy things that we've seen and experienced, but also the horrible and frightening things that exist within the world as well. And that title, Love, is very telling, because I think there's so many expressions of love within this section. Love is not just between a couple. Love is also the empathy that we feel for people just walking past them in the street, also the friendships that we hold. And let's not forget as well, in case you didn't know, the people that recorded the spoken word are people very close to the band and close to Thomas. So we have Johanna, his wife, in the, I think she's the first female voice that we hear. Thomas's parents are also in this. And Troy Donockley, before he became a full-fledged member of the band, I think it's fair to say him and Thomas have a very close friendship. So it's very fitting that his voice is also heard quite a lot on this poem as well. So let's go into the lyrics. One thing that I love, it always gets me going, is Nightwish referencing Nightwish. So that very first lyric, the nightingale is still locked in the cage. Instantly, I'm taken back to Escapist, one of my favourite songs. We've done an episode on it. Go and listen to it if you want to. And that song is all about the way reality really restricts you, keeps you within your cage, within what it tells you to be and what it tells you to do. And it's a really fitting place for this song to start, because I think a lot of us do begin that way. We kind of have to remind ourselves to be more aware of what's around us, the beauty that is around us, and all of the wonderful things that we have in our life. It's kind of an awakening. So the nightingale is still locked in the cage. At this point, it feels that Thomas, the songwriter, is saying he is still trapped in his old way of thinking. A little bit later, we get another Nightwish lyric. She dreams of story time and the river ghosts from this very same album, Ghost River and Story Time, of mermaids, of Whitmans and the ride. Mermaids turn loose the mermaids, Whitmans, well, this song in particular, and the ride. Perhaps the last ride of the day. Maybe. So I really love that he makes all these nods to the other songs on Imaginarium. And then a little bit later as well, What Is Left for Encore is the same old Dead Boy song, relating back to Dead Boy's poem and a term that Thomas uses to describe himself quite a lot. I wanted to mention the chorus, or rather the pre-chorus, sorry. A song of me, a song in need of a courageous symphony. It's almost like at this point the songwriter is reaching out for something to believe in, and he wants, it's like he's waiting to find the work of Whitman and the poem Song of Myself and really use that to propel himself forward. A verse of me, a verse in need of a pure heart singing me to peace. We mentioned a little bit earlier in the Whitman section that he says to view things with your own eyes and not his. And I think that this is exactly how we feel when we're desperate and when we're on that verge of desperation and need. We want someone to come to us with the answer, and we want them to tell us what we need to do. We understand through what Whitman said and through experiences ourselves that often what we need to do is to trust ourselves, trust our own instincts, and follow our own paths. And I think it's very telling that Thomas at this point is kind of calling out for somebody to tell him what to do. He needs a courageous symphony, a pure heart singing him to peace. And actually he kind of becomes that for himself just through understanding the work of Whitman. All that great heart lying still and slowly dying. I mentioned it earlier, I'm not sure I explained it in the best way, but I feel like that use of the word great really does give an enormity, and it gives an epicness to this image, you know, this huge heart, this huge being that is capable of so much, just lying still and slowly dying. There's something really heartbreaking about that. not even giving a fight, but just giving up. But unfortunately, that's the way it can feel when you're going through depression, and it feels like you've fought for something so much, you just want to lie back and just things to end. But there is a happy ending, guys. I know. I always seem to have like a melancholic readings of these lyrics. I don't know what that says about me, but I do think that's a lot of what goes into Thomas's work. But a little bit later, piano black. Sometimes the sky is piano black over cleansing waters. So we've got that antithesis there of piano black sky. It seems very dark, depressing, difficult, but then we've also got the cleansing waters. Like, there's one thing that is kind of threatening us with all of this worry and anxiety, and then this other thing that's reaching out to us and inviting us in for that cleansing experience. Sometimes the within is piano black. They kind of repeat that line a little bit later, and that is, it makes the metaphor for me even more clear. It's not necessarily the sky, it's within us. We can see things as piano black. We can feel that everything is doomed and everything is dark. But then again, we repeat, piano black over cleansing waters. Within ourselves, we have those cleansing waters, and it's about awakening to them. For me, absolutely my favorite part of the song, and the bit that I'm most excited to dig into, love, the fourth part and the spoken word poem, half of the song. There is some parts of the lyrics that I'm going to hold off on because we are going to discuss them in our panel chat later with my friends. But there's so many gorgeous descriptors in this section that really, Thomas has got a really amazing talent for poetry, because this is a poem, and it really brings things to mind. Quite often, especially in the older Nightwish songs, his lyrics can be really beautiful, but often maybe quite hard to dissect or just a little bit veiled. On this, I feel like he's really, as Whitman did, he's really speaking honestly and purely, and he's communicating in a way that is very concise and clear. And we see that a lot in the song lyrics that come after on Endless Forms and some of the songs on Human Nature. Not all of them. I think he still loves his metaphors, and he still loves his writing these wonderful ideas of like imagery and, you know, all of the poetic license that we lend to a songwriter. He's very much into that still, but I do think we see a lot more of the direct communication channel, if you will. A little bit later is when I really want to talk about, a little bit later in the poem. I want to travel where life travels, following its permanent lead, where the air tastes like snowborn music, where grass smells like freshborn Eden. That's something really beautiful, and it almost feels like a response to earlier when Thomas is begging for that song to release him. A little bit later, he is accepting his place in life's journey. He wants to travel where life travels. I really like that line. I would pass no man, no stranger, no tragedy or rapture. I would bathe in a world of sensation. Very much about mindfulness and what Whitman said about being present and appreciating what we have around us. And Thomas mentions all of those things in this love section of the poem, you know, the people that he passes in the elevator, or a homeless man, or the man with the dolls. We see so many people that perhaps have, and when I say he's passed them, I don't necessarily mean he's walked past a man with a doll in his attic, but you see them on TV and you hear their stories and read them in newspaper, and they come into our lives, and it's about delving deeper and understanding people's experiences. The thought of my family's graves was the only moment I used to experience true love. Is that not the truest thing you've ever heard? You don't know what you've got until it's gone. We see this time and time again, and sadly, so many of us never learn. In that once we lose someone, we kind of wish we hadn't fought with them. We wish we hadn't stopped talking to them because of some silly disagreement. We wish we hadn't put them through the things that we had. There's this thing about life that I think many of us think it is an eternity, and we think we're going to have the people in our lives forever. And when death comes, although it's been coming to every single one of us, every single one of our forefathers, we're still surprised. And that's a really important lesson. And then the next line is one that's so resonant to me. That love remains infinite, as I'll never be the man my father is. You can read that in a couple of ways. I'll never be the man my father is, in that we're different people. You can't, you know, say that one person has to be the same as their family or from the people that they grew up with. You know, we're all individuals. But at the same time as well, I think a lot of people would join me in this, and then it says, I'll never be the man my father is. We read it to say, my father's a greater man than I, and I'll never be that. And I find that really touching, because I love my dad so much, and I see so much of myself in my dad, and vice versa. I think I get a lot of his empathy and a lot of his love for people. But I think it's a completely natural feeling as well, that you always feel you'll never be what your parents are, because as life goes on and you gain experiences, you often learn to be more accepting, more loving. And that's something that when you're younger and you're growing feels so far away. And actually, just like death, it kind of happens to us all. Wisdom does come to, and I want to say us all, I'll say most of us, as we grow a little bit older. Who am I to judge a priest, beggar, whore, politician, wrongdoer? I am, you are, all of them already. This is just what Whitman said about seeing God in everyone, seeing beauty in everyone, but also seeing ourselves in everyone. I think it's easy to cast judgments on people if we don't care about their story, if we don't care about their history, where they've come from, what they've been through. Quite often we see this in the media, in that we are sold stories of good and evil, when actually when you dig into that evil party, you see all of the things that they've been through, and it makes a lot more sense and you feel a lot more empathy towards them. A little bit earlier I mentioned the lyric, "What's the colour of our lullaby?" And there's also that line, "Is there a village inside this snowflake? A child asks me." What I didn't mention is that Thomas follows that up with, "I've never been so close to truth as then. I touched its silver lining." This is almost like the epitome of his search for innocence, and why he is so allured to the idea of innocence. There's so much wonder in those questions. What is the colour of our lullaby? Is there a village inside this snowflake? And life, as we grow older, we get knowledge, which is great, but we have a more limited, shall we say, way of viewing the world, more cynical. And there's so much beauty in being open to everything, just as Whitman said. And I really do implore you to go and read that section of Song of Myself, because that's one of my favourite parts, which is where Whitman answers that question by kind of embodying the child and wondering the same things as the child and thinking up fun metaphors and ideas of what the grass could be in Song of Myself, and then in this, what colour would the lullaby be? They're questions that we often dismiss because we don't know the answer, but one of the key messages of Imaginarium is about imagination, and these are perfect tools to getting us into that idea of imagination. We want to sit with it and kind of imagine and think and wonder, because that in itself is a fantastic thing. A little bit later, "Paper is dead without words, ink idle without a poem, all the world dead without stories, without love and disarming beauty." This speaks a lot to Thomas and his passion for songwriting, his passion for communicating a message in his story. It's something that means so much to him, and that's probably why so many of us relate so much to the songs of Nightwish and feel really connected to the music. He really does put his heart and soul into his work, and this line really just shows his reverence for poetry and stories and music. And then a little bit later we hear from Troy, and this is a very telling section that kind of is a bit of a precursor to what would come on Endless Forms Most Beautiful. "Ever seen the Lord smile? All the care for the world made beautiful a sad man? Why do we still carry a device of torture around our necks? Oh, how rotten your pre-apocalypse is, all you Bible black fools living over nightmare ground." Now that one for me is a really powerful critique on religion. I understand it might feel like it's an antithesis to what is said earlier about why are you judging a preach and different people and different beliefs. I don't know that it is necessarily saying people are wrong for having such beliefs, but I think people are often misguided in the way that those beliefs shape their lives. Why do we still carry a device of torture around our necks, that cross that Jesus died on? And quite often Christianity, I'll use as the example, uses their own religion to critique other people and to almost like a device of torture against other people because of what the Bible says, because of interpretations. They use that to say, you are wrong. And so that device of torture, not only to Jesus, but also to anyone that stands in opposition or indifference to people within a religion. But also, how rotten your pre-apocalypse is. A lot of people, you could say, even waste their life because they dedicate it to living what they think they should do according to a religion, according to what someone tells them, according to the Bible or a book or a religious text. And they can make the world so harsh. You know, you hear about people killing in the name of religion. You hear of people disowning members of their family because of their sexuality. And I really like that line, that pre-apocalypse is. A lot of those people are waiting for the apocalypse, waiting for the end of the world so that they can ascend to heaven with Jesus. And in doing so, they are making life so miserable for so many people because of their beliefs. Bible black fools living over nightmare ground. This earth is a gift. If you believe in God, it's a gift from God, and all of us come from God according to Christian belief. And yet a lot of people do use that religion and that same faith that they have to diminish other people's existence.
And there forever remains that change from G to E minor.
There's one part that I specifically left until the end, and that's for me the most poignant lyric for the way it's delivered, the way it's at the end, and the fact that it has left me puzzled for quite a long time. And that is the lyric, "And there forever remains that change from G to E minor." I have sat and thought about this for so long. Like, what could it mean? I do not have musical knowledge, I've mentioned before. So I always felt, maybe this is lazy of me, but I think I kind of got to a point where I was like, oh, it's probably musical. I'm probably not going to understand it, and therefore I'm probably not going to go in too much into it. But then, of course, this podcast came along, and I really felt like, if only for myself, I really want to get to the bottom of this. So I asked my dear friend, Peter. Peter is going to be on an episode at some point. We spoke about it. But I asked him to listen to Song of Myself because he is extremely talented musician. He's an amazing pianist. And you can check him out on YouTube. I will link to his profile on Instagram and you can find it from there. But he's such a talented pianist. But he had a listen and he said, well, I'll read his message that he kindly WhatsApped to me. He said, "Having listened, I'm not sure what the reference is." You and me both, Peter. But he did go into detail about the keys that each of the part of the poem and the song are in. So it seems that chorus 1 and chorus 2 are both in G, and the exit to spoken word section, which is just when we hear the woman speaking, is in E minor, G to E minor. So I kind of sat with it and thought what it could be. My poor friend Peter was just puzzled. He said, "The piece rests mainly in the key of D minor, with the exception of the two choruses, which are in G minor. Even the first 3 minutes of the spoken section are in D minor, but there is that unexpected modulation to E minor. If the line had been, 'And there forever remains that change from D to E minor,' then I'd say it's about the shift in mood from one section of the spoken bit to the other. But it's not." So poor Peter, he kind of got all that information and he seems to be partway there. I'm going to come onto a theory in a second, which seems quite logical. But just to take you where my mind went with this, I looked back at the chorus and the lyrics of the chorus, which we went through in the lyrical analysis, but I found it really interesting that the woman's voice is, of course, Johanna, Thomas's wife, and she speaks seemingly about the formation of Nightwish when she says, "The path under my bare feet," which is a reference to the very first set of lyrics on Elven Path, the band's very first album. So, of course, Thomas has mentioned a lot about the depressive thoughts that he's had, particularly if we think of like Dark Passion Play, which was the album prior to Song of Myself. And the lyric in the chorus is dark. It's or that great heart lying still and slowly dying, almost like this enormous thing just failing and accepting its death. And that is the chorus that's in G. And then a little bit later, as my friend Peter said, we go into E minor, and that is when Johanna comes into the piece. So, between us, with his amazing musical knowledge and my interpretation, I wonder if it could be that throughout that negativity, throughout that depression and the struggles that he went through, that he spoke about on Dark Passion Play and on songs like The Poet and the Pendulum, if Johanna is very much one of the things that brought him out of it. But also she's talking about Nightwish and his creativity, and music is so important to Thomas. So perhaps it's Johanna and Nightwish that brought him out of that misery. And there forever remains that change from G, his depression and his struggle, to E minor, Johanna, some kind of bright future, a happy ever ending, if you will, and the future of Nightwish. So that was my interpretation alongside my amazing friend Peter. Thank you, Peter. But I would love to hear what you think as well. I thought it was really interesting, something that I'd never noticed, and someone pointed this out on the internet, so kudos to you. I'm sorry I didn't make a note of who said it. But the main character in Imaginarium is called Gem. G-E-M. G-E-M. Amazing. I love finding out these things, especially if they pass me by. But I also want to talk about a quote I found whilst I was researching this on the Ultimate Metal Forum. And this was posted by No Doubt Aholic, and it references a Tumblr post from The Hiding Amaranth. And they have... It's quite long, so hopefully I think it's a nice payoff. So please relax, sit back, and see what you think about this. So, she says, I don't know if there are any music theory people around here, but there's actually a hidden meaning in this. I endearingly call it a music theory metaphor. I'm not sure if I'm right or not, but going with the rest of the theme of the album, it makes sense. If he is referring to G and E minor and scales, and not just notes or even chords, then this applies. I'm copying the rest from a fan on Tumblr, The Hiding Amaranth, who really worded this well for people who don't know much about this stuff. So first of all, what the hell is a scale? In music, a scale is a sequence of musical notes in ascending and descending order. Most commonly, especially in the context of the common practice period, the notes of a scale will belong to a single key, thus providing material for or being used to conveniently represent part or all of a musical work, including melody and or harmony. I'm going to talk only about natural scales. There are other kinds of scales. In a grotesque abstract, eight notes. The first one will appear in the end. Everyone knows the C major scale, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C. But there's a lot of other scales. The C major scale is the only one that there are not accidentals. And then they go on to explain what that is. I don't know what that is. I'm not going to explain how the accidentals are applied. It's a very evil knowledge. Okay, then. They didn't go and explain that, I just misread. So an example of another scale, D major scale, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, and the minor scales, what the hell are they? In another grotesque abstract, minor scales are scales with another name, but with the same accidentals of its major relative. How do we know that a major scale is relative to a minor scale? Another evil knowledge, I'm simply trying to simplify this, so it's out. I don't know what that means. Example of relative scales. D major, D, E, F sharp, G, A, B, C sharp, D. B minor, B, C sharp, D, E, F sharp, G, A, B. Is this making any sense to you? Look, same accidentals. And finally, Thomas's scales. G major, G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G. E minor, E, F sharp, G, A, B, C, D, E. The same accidental. He's saying that he has changed, but he's still the same. He's saying he's grown up. so many places you can go with that, but it's a clever little gem, I think. So that was very technical, wasn't it? And I'm sure if you have a musical knowledge, that all made sense. But for the rest of us, I think it really paid off towards the end. So it seems that the G major and the E minor scales have the same accidental, which I don't fully know what an accidental is, but I'm trusting that maybe it's the F sharp, because that's the only one that says sharp next to it. But I thought that this was a really interesting part of the lyric to go into, because it's something that sat with me for such a long time, and I imagine a lot of you as well. It feels almost like the clue is right there, but how do we get to the bottom of it? So hopefully, whether it's my interpretation, this interpretation, which is probably more accurate, or your own, hopefully you've got to the bottom of that precarious lyric. I thought to make this last special episode, we could do a panel a little bit similarly to what we did with the Human Nature fan response, but I wanted to reach out to a few of my friends and see what they thought about various things that we're discussing in this episode. So for people out there, you are about to be treated to so many different accents from around the UK and also the US, but I will let everyone introduce themselves. So first up, a familiar voice, Oha Cade, who has been on the podcast a couple of times. On this season, he was on Beauty and the Beast and also Master Passion Greed.
Hi, and thank you, Simon, for having me back on the podcast. It's always such a pleasure. My name is Oha Cade. I'm the composer of a symphonic metal opera called Valcata. That's V-A-L-C-A-T-A. And if you'd like to check out our stuff, you can visit valcata.com, where you'll find all the links you need. So it would mean a lot if you would check us out and follow us on our journey.
Now, whenever I think of the Annette years of Nightwish, I always think of my friend Alan. I know that he was a huge fan of Annette within Nightwish, and particularly these albums, Dark Passion Play and Imaginarium. So again, he was previously on an episode. He was on Planet Hell, the song that got him into Nightwish, and also provided the voiceovers for me on the Kinslayer episode. So here's Alan.
Hello, thank you for having me on. My name is Alan. I am from Glasgow, and you may remember me from the Planet Hell episode. I started listening to Nightwish when I was 13, just after Once came out and before they announced Annette as the singer, and ever since then they have pretty obsessively been my favourite band.
Next we have my friend Chris. I really wanted Chris on the podcast. He recently started a YouTube channel which I really enjoy. He's discussing things like Evanescence, as well as personal things in his own life. But Chris is so honest and open that I knew he'd be such a fantastic guest for the podcast. You can check him out on YouTube. His username is Killershoe.
First of all, thank you so much for having me. My name is Chris, otherwise known as Killershoe. I've wanted to be a part of this for so long and I'm finally here. First of all, I am a singer-songwriter / vocal coach, and I'm just an all-in-all bit of social media cesspool, really. I have a fledgling YouTube channel under the guise of Killershoe. All one word, just stick me in Google and you'll find it. I critique music on the side, especially the likes of female fronted metal, which I have been obsessed with since I was 13-year-old, back in the year of 2003. Now, I've been a fan of Nightwish since 2004, when I got my tentacles on their first album. It wasn't their first album, it was their fifth. Stupid Chrissy. When I got my hands on Once, which was one of them albums which changed my life forever. And since then, I have been a gigantic fan of Nightwish since. I own just about every album they have, and I just love them, really.
And last but not least, my friend Dan, who I've known for quite a long time now. We met on a forum dedicated to female fronted metal. And of course, Nightwish were always a huge talking point, particularly around the Annette years. We were all speculating in there who the new vocalist was going to be. Although I haven't actually met Dan. So Dan, after this whole COVID thing, we have to meet.
Hi, my name is Daniel, and I discovered Nightwish around the year 2003. It was when bands like Evanescence, Muse, Linkin Park were really big, and Kerrang! TV was a big thing back then. I wasn't really allowed to listen to much pop music or any sort of rock or anything back when I was younger. So when my mum was out, I would sneakily watch Kerrang! TV. And I remember seeing this music video for Nemo, and I was absolutely taken by it. The fact that it was a female vocalist with a metal band, the dramatic visuals, the fantastic red coat and the long windswept hair. I hadn't seen anything like that before, and I wanted to know more. But I also remember being a bit confused. I couldn't figure out whether the band was called Nightwish or the band was called Nemo. But after a bit of Googling and a bit of looking up on Yahoo Music at the time, I started to fall in love with them and watch some of their older music. And then the album once came out and I was hooked. Nightwish for me is easily one of my favourite bands. The album Once, followed by the live album End of an Era, really solidified that for me. I will always come back to those two albums. The live performance particularly, obviously it is special because it's Tarja's last performance, but it's such a wonderful live album and such a brilliant performance from the band. It is possible that it is special to me because it was one of the first albums of theirs that I really got into, so I might have a bias there. But when Tarja left the band, I was absolutely heartbroken. A bit like when a boy band breaks up. I was a little bit, you know, a bit upset at the time. But fully embraced Annette and now fully embraced Floor. I think they've had such an incredible journey and have constantly come up with some amazing creative albums, and I'm really excited to see what comes from the band going forward.
I wanted to start by broadening the scope a little bit and talking about Imaginarium as an album. So a hugely ambitious project with all of the film elements and also the bombast and epics of songs like Song of Myself, but also the experimentation of Slow Love Slow and Scare Tale. So what did you all think of the album?
I actually think Imaginarium is Nightwish's best album. It's one of those incredibly rare pieces of music where every song feels different, yet all part of a cohesive whole, much like a theme park, fittingly, because every ride is different, yet it's all part of the same theme park, and I think that's Imaginarium to a T. I still listen to it now and again, just from beginning to end, and it is just this complete wild ride. And as much as I love the albums and the music that they've done since then, I actually don't think this will be topped. I think it's honestly, if you're going to introduce someone to Nightwish, I think this is the best album you could possibly do it with. My favourite song on the album is Scare Tale, because it really speaks to that inner goth child that is still somewhere within me. It's like every time I went to a theme park, my favourite ride was the ghost train, and that is Scare Tale. It's the ghost train of the theme park that is the album. And it is incredibly epic. I love the way that Annette sings it. She sounds like a wicked witch, and I honestly don't think anyone could do it better than her.
So my thoughts on Imaginarium in general. Imaginarium, at the beginning, is one of my least listened to Nightwish albums. Controversial, I know. Now, there is a reason behind this. I absolutely loved Once, and then after I had discovered Once, I had listened to all of Nightwish's back catalogue. I bought every CD, every £15 CD, and when you're 14 years old, that is not cheap when you're living off a 10 quid a week, well, allowance. It bankrupted me. Dark Passion Play came, absolutely loved that. But by the time Imaginarium was declared over Facebook, with the biggest, most pretentious statement I'd ever seen, I was already bored of Nightwish because I could already predict what Imaginarium was going to sound like. And Nightwish were on the brink of sounding stagnant. They really were. And I was bored. And I I was just bored of listening to the same old Nightwish again and again and again. It didn't matter if they had a new singer or if I had this massive motion picture behind it. It was still going to sound like same old Nightwish. And I needed variety, and I got bored and I drifted off for a couple of years. Until Floor Jansen came along, but that's another story. This is a good album. It's a really good album. I've seen the motion picture. Do I have to say anything else? It wasn't bad. Story was a bit convoluted. It was kind of like a Hans Christian Andersen novel on crack. It was okay. There was some really good videography and really good creative ideas behind it. It was never for me. And I don't think I will ever go back to the motion picture itself. But nowadays, I can actually view Imaginarium as an album itself, and I don't have to associate it with the motion picture. Thank God. It's a good epic album. I just wish I gave it more time than I actually did. That's kind of the saddest thing about it. I do have favourite songs, but the controversial thing about it is they are the ones that Floor Jansen sang on Showtime Storytime. And for the major reason alone, this album really put me off because of the way they mastered and mixed Annette's vocals. They were just mixed and mastered in a way that felt like her voice did not belong in that album. Like, that's something I've recently discovered after re-listening to the album more. And it's quite annoying because Annette has a fantastic voice. And I just felt she was really let down by this album. And it shouldn't have been her last album. It should have been so much better than the way it was done.
I would have to agree with what Chris says there, although I don't think it was as intentional. I did also overlook Imaginarium a little bit when it first came out. I mentioned on a couple of episodes, particularly the Storytime episode, that I was at university when this album came out. And as anyone who goes to university knows, your life becomes full of studying in the day and clubbing in the night. So I didn't have too much time to do much else. Having said that, it was a bit of a blessing and a curse at the same time, because rather than absorb a Nightwish album every single day, constantly on repeat in the way that I have been known to do, Imaginarium had a little bit more longevity for me. A lot of the songs sounded fresher for longer because I wasn't listening to them on repeat constantly. A perfect example is Scare Tale, which really did come to life for me as soon as last year. So I've always really liked Scare Tale. There's so many elements of it. I love Annette's crazy voice in that song, and I love Marco's invitation to the Cirque des Morts. But the instrumentation, and particularly the orchestrals, really stood out to me. I remember I was on a walk around London and I was listening to Imaginarium, and all these years later, it really stood out to me how epic this song is. I absolutely love it. And now, although I probably would have said it was kind of a middling track for me, it's quickly become one of my favourite and go-to songs from Imaginarium. So sometimes it can be good to not absolutely go crazy and go ham on an album when you first get it, as I'm finding. And also with Human Nature, just because of the way that I consume music now, I'm not listening to it constantly in the way that I was when I listened to Once and Dark Passion Play. It really does withhold some of its magic for later listens and really helps draw you back, because it's constantly revealing sides to itself that you hadn't heard before.
Imaginarium was quite a nice time in Nightwish's career, because they had just gone through a few albums that really were quite personal in nature. I think fans were quite excited and thrilled when Imaginarium came out, because the music and the theme was kind of a callback to earlier Nightwish, where it was a little bit more uplifting because the focus was on imagination and adventure and fantasy, which are lighter and more heartwarming themes and topics than, you know, such heaviness that's explored in tracks like The Poet and the Pendulum, you know. And also, people were just excited to hear what Annette's second offering would be like, especially since we knew that the album was going to be written with her voice in mind specifically. The album was a huge success, and It's no surprise. It's an absolutely beautiful album. For me personally, it's not my favorite only because I'm such a fan of really heavy music that I do feel this album is one of the least metal albums that they have. My two favorite songs on the album, therefore, are probably Ghost River and Scaretale. It's really an album where it's clear that Tuumas was bursting with inspiration. There's so many cool tracks. You know, of course, there's Song of Myself, which we're going to discuss, but there's also the really unusual Slow Love Slow. Turn Loose the Mermaids is also a very unique song. Just lots of playfulness and just zest and vitality. It's very sad that it was Annette's last album, but, you know, what can you do? And I suppose I should also mention the movie that this album came with. I have seen the movie, and it's hard to build a movie around an album rather than the other way around, you know. I quite liked the movie, actually, because I had not heard good things. Well, it certainly wasn't the most perfect movie. I think that lots of it actually could have been cut out for it to feel a little bit more digestible. But overall, I think that they should be quite proud of it because, I don't know, the special effects and the way the score interpreted the Imaginarium songs was something to behold. So I'm going to give a thumbs up for the movie.
So when Imaginarium came out, I believe I was in my final year of university. And for some reason, I didn't really gel to it straight away, which is really surprising because all albums up until that point, and even since, I've had on repeat since they were released. But for some reason, I just couldn't bring myself to really dive deep into this album initially. I think it was when the following album, Endless Forms Most Beautiful, came out, that I went back and re-listened to a lot of Imaginarium and realised I was sleeping on a masterpiece. I don't know why I didn't really get into it. I have to say, one of my favourite songs on the album is Storytime. Obviously, that's such a wonderful opening for the album and the whole era. But also Slow Love Slow. I think that's a wonderful, really beautiful song, and Annette's vocals really shine through. And again, it's another little facet that we see in The Diamond of Nightwish, incorporating jazz or swing into their repertoire.
As Oan mentioned in his little clip, this is of course the last album with Annette. Probably not something that the band envisioned when it was created, but unfortunately that's the way it went. Everything afterwards would see the band kind of splitting from within, and then Floor coming in and saving that American tour. But I do think that Annette is a really special part of Nightwish history, and for a lot of people, her place within the band is just as important as the divas that bookended her, Floor and Tarja. She has a really characterful voice, and I would argue that albums like Imaginarium and Dark Passion Play would not sound the same without her style. So I did want to talk to you all and ask you, what were your thoughts when Annette was announced as the new singer of Nightwish?
When Annette was announced as the new vocalist for Nightwish, at first I was a bit taken aback. It wasn't what I was expecting to hear from a band like Nightwish, especially with the legacy that Tarja had left behind. To go to almost a clean pop vocal was quite the surprise. However, she interpreted the songs of Nightwish in a different way and brought a new life to the songs, which I really appreciated and loved searching out the live versions of older songs on YouTube. Even to this day, songs like The Siren and the acoustic versions of Nemo are quite beautiful, the way she's interpreted them. One of my favourite songs of hers has to be Meadows of Heaven. I think the combination of her very sweet vocals with the gospel choir and that sort of epic power ballad ending will always be one of my favourite songs, and that's why I really do love Dark Passion Play. It went there in so many different ways, although you could put a gospel choir in any song and I'll buy it.
So, my reflection on the Annette years. I will say this now. I am a gigantic Annette Olsen fan. She has a fantastic voice. She still has a fantastic voice. I just think a lot of her time was overshadowed by Talia Gate. And to this day, they are still the thousands upon thousands of White Walkers on the horizon waiting to descend upon the castle. That's how I describe them, sorry. My heart goes out to Annette because she got so much hate and it wasn't fair. And I also think a lot of her time was overshadowed by comparisons to Talia, and it just was not fair, I will say that, and she shouldn't have gotten the level of hate she did because she is a fantastic performer and singer in her own right. And she's not Talia. That was probably the whole reason why she was hired by Nightwish. And I understand that, and I understand the differences in dynamic. I mean, from kind of a psychological perspective, there was many differences between her and Talia and the way they both kind of conducted themselves. During the Talia era, Talia knew she was the figurehead of Nightwish, and she owned it. Yes, I know there was the whole Talia's the diva, blah, blah, blah. But Talia knew she was the absolute poster girl of Nightwish, and she owned it. She was just the ass, honey, house down, crap like that. Annette came across as more kind of secondary and passive, if that made sense. She didn't make the impact that Talia had. Obviously, Talia had the advantage of being there from day one. I think Annette found it very daunting to follow in Talia's footsteps, especially with the constant 5 years of absolute hate. And I think that does affect somebody psychologically. It does absolutely destroy somebody psychologically. And I don't honestly blame Annette for taking such a massive gap from music after Nightwish. I'm surprised she came back at all. And it's really sad because the Annette era was overshadowed, and that's kind of the sad thing for what Annette will be remembered for. And it's just not fair, especially on such a fantastic and gifted artist such as Annette. And I'm so glad she's came back with the Dark Element. I hope she makes it more of a full-time project so she can build her own fan base of people who absolutely adore her for her gifts and her talents. What do I think of Annette's contributions on Song of Myself? I think, vocal-wise, this is the best Annette has been on this whole album. Now, as I've previously mentioned, I never felt like Annette's vocals belonged on this album. I don't know why. The way the mixing and mastering was done was completely different from Dark Passion Play, where Dark Passion Play worked with Annette's pop vocals, and they were like, right, this is the recording technique we've got to do. We've got to use vocal layer, and we've got to do this. This is how we make pop vocals work for this kind of band. I think the mixing and mastering seemed very minimal for Imaginarium, especially when it came to Annette's vocals. It just didn't seem right. Annette's vocals just did not sit right on this album in general. However, Song of Myself was her best vocal performance of the whole album. I loved her uses of distortion on her belting for the chorus section, where it gave her voice a level of aggression which I had never heard in Annette's voice before, and she carried it so well.
I was extremely open to Annette being the new singer of Nightwish when she was first announced. As I mentioned before on the podcast, you know, I was a relatively new fan when Talia left, and when I first heard Dark Passion Play, I was just over the moon. I really felt that her voice fit beautifully with the music, and the soulfulness of her voice contributed such an emotional quality to the music that was irreplaceable, in my opinion. You know, Meadows of Heaven, I mean, come on. That, like, just is such a spiritual experience. And I don't even mean in a religious way, but just, like, it's something that we'll never get again. I'm not doubting that Tarja or Floor could really nail that song, but that is a song, in my opinion, that really belongs to Annette. And there's many, many songs over those two albums that I think just Annette kills and the other singers could not handle it. You know, Floor has admitted that Amaranth, for example, is a very uncomfortable song for her to sing, whereas obviously that song, you know, fit perfectly with Annette's voice. Another example is Slow Love, Slow, Scare Tale, Sahara, even the Poet and the Pendulum. I have to go back and listen to the studio version of that, because there is a quality in Annette's voice that lends itself to that song, especially in the final section, Home. Obviously, Flora's live version is supremely epic, but you also have to admit that when you hear Annette sing that song, either live or in the studio version, you really do hear that she's giving her body and her soul to that song. I think that she is so underrated. I was sad to see her go, because I really did want to hear more albums with her. I was torn between my happiness about hearing Floor join them, because I was such a huge fan of After Forever, but I think in another dimension there are fans who are enjoying some really epic and beautiful Nightwish albums with Annette as the lead singer.
I actually really, really liked Annette as a vocalist, even though you could argue that technically she wasn't the best, she was my favourite just because I loved the way she sounded. Thankfully, because I got into the band between Tarja and Annette, I had this massive back catalogue of Tarja stuff to go through, so I felt like I had my fill. And then when I found out she was gone out of the band, I was just like, oh well, wonder who the next girl is. Then I heard Eva, and even though her voice was very different, I thought it still sounded absolutely beautiful, and the music was still to the incredibly high quality that they'd done before. So for me, it really wasn't, how to put this nicely, I didn't really feel very negatively about it as a lot of people did at the time, and I spent a lot of those next 5 years defending her online. And even though she's left, I still love all her work. I really like her solo album, and I absolutely love her two albums with the Dark Element. Honestly, even though a lot of people didn't like Annette, I think we need to learn that we really just have to be a bit nicer to people. Like, she wasn't the one who chose to be in the band, it was the band themselves that chose for her to be in it, and she really didn't deserve a lot of the really vile hatred that was thrown towards her. So yeah, be nice. As for her contributions, I think that she added this really joyful, fun energy to the band that we didn't really see with Tarja. Not to insult her, she absolutely had her own stage presence and her own thing going on, but Annette really added this kind of bubbly, fun energy we hadn't seen in the band before. And Floor brings her own thing. She's like this big, epic warrior goddess. But I really miss the energy that Annette brought, even though every singer has brought their own unique take on the band.
I'm glad to see so many people speaking positively about Annette. I know she does get a bit of a bad rep with a certain circle of fans, and I think that's a real shame. I always feel like Nightwish is more than the sum of its parts, and yes, Annette was very different, but there's so much within the Dark Passion Play and Imaginarium albums that feels like a continuation of Once. The bombast, the epic, that cinematic style really does carry through on the records. I like what Alan said as well about Annette's voice being a lot more playful and fun, and I think it does bring a pop style that maybe is why some people don't like it. Some people like their metal to be pure and true, although you could argue that opera is not technically metal either. I do think it is probably the right decision for them to choose a vocalist that's so different to Tarja, but I do think that's also been a bit of a detriment to Annette. Rather than people saying that she's a decent and competent opera singer, they just discard her as a pop vocalist and almost discredit everything that she's delivered just because it's not opera.
I do think that's a real shame, but I think it's probably the best thing that they could have done. If they'd chosen another opera singer, the comparisons, I feel, would be even more present and maybe even more intensely debated on social media and YouTube and such. But I also agree with something a couple of the guys mentioned, in that Annette really has come into her own in the dark element. It's a band that definitely has some similarities to Nightwish, most notably because of Annette's voice, but it forges its own path. It's a lot more accessible. It's a lot more, I would say, pop-oriented, at least in its song structures. And I think that her voice really does fit on that record. I touched on it a tiny little bit in the Off the Elven Path episode for The Dark Element, but I really do think she's found her own there. I do also have really strong memories about the time that Annette was announced as the vocalist. So there was quite a gap between Talia leaving and the band deciding on the vocalist and then eventually revealing her identity. And it just made me even more desperate to find out who it was. As I mentioned in Dan's intro, on the forums that we were on, we were all speculating, and we kind of all, I think, maybe thought that it was going to be a well-known or a familiar face, or should I say voice, in the scene. But of course, Annette was relatively unknown at the time, unless you were a fan of Alison Avenue. I do remember that the day finally came that we were going to find out the new vocalist, and it was on a Saturday, and I was supposed to be meeting my friends, as we did every Saturday, and I was really torn as to whether I should go and see them or stay at home. And true to the word of the noise video that would come later, I did go and see my friends, because, you know, friends probably more important than a press release about a new vocalist. But I remember being so almost nervous whilst I was out with them, thinking, when I get back, we're going to have a new vocalist. What is she going to be like? And I think I even messaged one of my friends during, like, what's happened? Has it been announced? What's going on? And they released this beautiful promo image. And I do remember really liking it so much that I printed it off and framed it and put it on my wall, or probably put it in like some kind of poster styly on my wall. But I do remember really liking that image and being really drawn to Annette from the start. So from beginnings to ends, Song of Myself is the song we're focusing on in this episode, and it is the last recorded song that Nightwish would release with Annette on vocals. Of course, this song was followed by Imaginarium, but that was an instrumental score. So it's only right that we do talk a little bit about Song of Myself. So just wax lyrical, guys, tell me what you think about this song. And first of all, I want to ask you, why do you think it's so underrated? And by that, I mean, people are always talking about Ghost Love Score, The Poet and the Pendulum. Why not this epic too?
I am going to give an incredibly boring answer to this. I just think it's because the first half of the song is so different from the second. I get that it all fits together. I think that those first, like, 3 to 4 minutes are the most catchy moments on the album, but I think you have to be in a certain mood to listen to the last half of it. Like, for the first half, you can just kind of stick it on, you can just kind of listen casually for that last bit. I think you really need to listen carefully for it to really hit you. Whereas Ghost Love Score, The Poet and the Pendulum, Greatest Show on Earth, they're all very fitting within the kind of traditional song structure, even if they're stretched out for like 15 to 25 minutes.
Now, I do believe one of the main reasons that this song is so overlooked in regards to other epic songs such as Ghost Love Score and Poet in the Pendulum is probably for the same reason I had lost interest in Nightwish for a couple of years. I think both of these songs were made at the peak of, well, I want to say at the peak of Nightwish's career during that point, because the noughties were essentially the peak of Nightwish's career. Now, with Once, Ghost Love Score will always be remembered as that epic song carried by both Talia and Floor. There is a version that Annette has sang, but for some reason it's hidden deep in the archives. Ghost Love Score was the first of its kind, as far as I'm concerned, because most people would have, like me, discovered Nightwish during the Once era. And Ghost Love Score was essentially the first long epic Nightwish track that many of the fans would have discovered Dark Passion Play was Annette's time to shine. Now, everybody had heard Amaranth before it came out. Everybody had heard Eva before the album had came out. With a Nightwish album, we ain't here for the singles. We're here for that first track on the album. And I thought it was genius how Dark Passion Play was the first track on the album. This 13-minute masterpiece which introduced us to Annette. That track, from the get-go, as soon as we pressed play, showed us all what Annette Olsen was capable of. It was Nightwish's way of saying, we are starting the album with the biggest track. This is our new singer, and this is everything she's got. And my God, did she put everything into that song. We showed so many variations of dynamic, even the parts at the end, and where the "Be still, my son, your home" bit, which, where before in the song she just sang in this aggressive style and had broken down into this kind of gentle, more mothering role. And I'd seen this song live, and watching Annette break down into tears for that section, it just gives that song a whole new meaning as a mother singing about being a mother. She just gave so much energy to that song. It's her way of saying, hey world, this is me, what do you think? And I think both Ghost Love Score and Dark Passion Play will of course overshadow A Song of Myself, which is a shame because it's a very powerful and emotional song in itself, which I will get into.
I think the reason why Song of Myself might be overlooked in favour of other epics like The Poet and the Pendulum and Ghost Love Score and The Greatest Show on Earth, apart from the fact that the titles themselves are really quite dramatic in and of themselves, is that the song's cover topics are quite epic in and of themselves and quite dramatic. You know, The Poet and the Pendulum, you know, you've got the swinging blade of this, you know, imminent death of the poet and this great artist, and Ghost Love Score with this epic love story of a long-lost love, and The Greatest Show on Earth. I mean, the whole song is about human evolution. I mean, how much more epic do you want to get with the song? Song of Myself kind of feels like the forgotten sibling, and I do wish they would give it a little bit more of a spotlight. Hopefully in the new tour next year, we'll start to see it, you know, brought out of the shadows and into the light.
The reason I think Song of Myself is overlooked is straight up because it's just not as good as the other epics. And in my opinion, that's intentional. The meaning that I get from the lyrics and from the composition as a whole is that it's about something that's being unexpressed, held back, some form of perhaps writer's block. Maybe the song is about him being restricted to the metal genre too much, and the reason I feel that is because the riffs in this song are very straightforward and bland, and they are monotonous in a way that I feel is actually quite intentional. So there's an irony to the whole, the bombastic, heavy, like the breakdowns and all that. There's not a whole lot of color to it. It's a quite a gray sound, and I think that is an artistic choice and is quite intentional. All that gray hurt lying still in silent suffering, smiling like a clown until the show has come to an end. Like, he's Tumas is kind of doing what's expected of him. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna write a huge epic song with massive orchestra and choir. I'm just gonna do that again. And he's actually said this in interviews about Imaginarium. He said, you know, after Dark Passion Play, I felt like we had done the biggest, heaviest, most bombastic thing possible. And I thought to myself, what else can we do? And that's really where he got the inspiration for songs like Slow Love Slow, just stuff that really Nightwish was not really known for, like really odd music.
Thank you, Oha, and I can definitely see what you're saying in this song. I think that Tuomas really had proven what he can do, and I think if we look at the format of this kind of song, I don't believe that Tuomas was ever planning on having a 6 or 7 minute spoken word piece
to perform at a festival or something like that. I definitely think he had made his point with epics like Beauty of the Beast and then Ghost Love Score and proved that he could do that. And this is something a little bit different. But when it comes to it being overlooked, I wouldn't personally say that it's because it's worse, but I do think it's because it's a lot less accessible. I've seen this happen with a couple of Nightwish songs. We saw it a little bit with The Greatest Show on Earth, particularly the extended outro with that whale sound, I think, and then a little bit of spoken word from Richard Dawkins. But a lot of that is cut in the live performance, and if it's not cut, I believe it's played during, like, when the lights come up when everyone's leaving, so it is played, but it's not, they're not expecting you to give your full attention to it. With this one, with Song of Myself, I see that in live performances, so if we look at the famous Showtime Storytime performance, they cut out the second half. But when we reflect on songs, I think that we reflect on them in their entirety. So if we are going to sit down and listen to a song, and we want to listen to a Nightwish song, and we're not keen on the spoken word part, then of course I think people are naturally going to be drawn towards other songs or other epics like Ghost Love Score, Poet and the Pendulum, because it's something that they can put on, enjoy from start to finish. I think when you've got a song that half of it, I think it is pretty much half of the entire runtime, is that spoken word, it might feel like they're being a little bit shortchanged almost. Of course you're not, but I think of it a bit like when I listen to an album that's overly long. It can have 12 really good killer songs, but if they extend it out by 5 or 6 mediocre songs, it can really ruin the feel of the entire album. So my roundabout way of saying this is that I think maybe people struggle to accept this song in its entirety because there's a part of it that they don't particularly resonate with. And again, I'm generalizing here. It's just a comment that I've seen quite a lot, in that people have said that they've literally edited out the spoken word piece. People said that they didn't enjoy it too much, and that's absolutely fine. It's something that when Nightwish do something slightly different, I think it's completely normal for people to not necessarily like it, because if they wanted to just please their core fan base, then they'd just do the same thing over and over. But as Oha said, Thomas on this album in particular was really trying to change the way he wrote songs and change the songs that he put out, like Slow Love Slow, for example. And this one, I think it will have its fans, but if you're coming into Nightwish from an album like Century Child and Once and then Dark Passion Play, expecting this bombastic metal, and then you get treated to a 6 or 7 minute spoken word, you might be a little bit taken aback. Meanwhile, if you are a spoken word poetry fan, you might think, what's this racket in the first 6 minutes, but then really enjoy the second part. So, you know, Nightwish are always going to be preaching to an audience of metal fans, because that's where they've come from and that's where the majority of their fans sit. And unfortunately, I think sometimes when you do take a risk like this, it won't pay off for everyone. But for me, myself, I really enjoy the poem. Now, with that in mind, my last question to you all is specifically about the spoken word poem in the second half of this song. What do you all think? Do you think it was a worthwhile risk? Do you enjoy it? Do you skip it? Tell me everything.
I have mixed feelings about the spoken word section. The music becomes a little more light and we start talking about the great heart escaping and not lying still. It's the first half of the whole spoken word section that I really feel is done very well. Shipwrecked on some matte painted island, clad in nothing but the surf, beauty's finest robe. I'm welling up even saying those words. It's just so beautiful that really is just, that blows me away. I love that. But then there is also an interview that can be found where Tumas admits that this section is overly long, but he also adds the comment that that is the whole point of it. So this whole song is really like a meta experience. Maybe he's like overdoing it yet again to show us how desperate he is for inspiration. For example, you know, where the air tastes like snow music, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, the thought of my family's grave was the only moment I used, you know, it's What? I don't know. It's like from here on, the theme becomes a little contrived and confused. It just goes off the rails from there. Verses of confusion, perhaps verses of bore. So again, I really feel like this final spoken word section goes a little over the top on purpose. I'm not trying to criticize the song or say it's bad. I'm saying that it's actually quite a very artistic, intentional composition. And the fact that it was placed on this album specifically, I think, says a lot.
Like me, I'm sure you are desperate to hear it again. So here is Ohakade's amazing Arnold Schwarzenegger impression.
The thought of my family's grave was the only moment I used.
Literally no end to that man's talent. Anyway, over to you, Alan.
I think the spoken word poem at the end is absolutely beautiful. I think Thomas has this way of really writing something that captures exactly what he wants it to. It makes you feel exactly what he's trying to get across. Like, if you listen to all the works of nature which adorn the world, every single part of that song sounds exactly like what he's named it after and what he wants you to think of. And Song of Myself, the spoken poem, is very much the same. And I think it's actually pretty touching that he got many people he knew to record it for him. It just adds an extra layer to how absolutely gorgeous and hard-hitting it is. Honestly, it makes me tear up sometimes. It's a really stunning song.
I think Song of Myself is a very personally telling song. It gives away so much about Thomas as a person. And as I was listening to it at the gym, because you know I work out, I was sitting there thinking, wow, this actually says more about him than I thought it would. Now, I think the song in itself has some very cynical overtones, which I think was kind of like a precursor into Human v Nature. Because there was already the mentioning of Thomas' hate or dislike towards modern society and the reliance on technology, which became very prevalent in later albums. Now, the spoken word parts were very interesting at first, and the major reason and the major kind of epiphany I've had in regards to Thomas's lyric writing is due to the fact that Thomas writes his lyrics for visual imagery rather than kind of poetry and prose. And by that, I mean, here we go, here's some songwriting nerdy stuff here. The kind of poetry typical lyric work is where you listen and read lyrics and you understand what the meaning is straight away. It's a kind of very straightforward storytelling. Visual imagery, where you will find quite a lot of that in regards to, like, let's just say, like bands like Deftones. Visual imagery is a collection of words and sentences which are there to create an image in your mind. And a lot of these sections do that, especially when it comes to the section about the old man getting naked and, was it kissing a display dummy? When you first hear that, you're like, what? But you get that image in your head straight away, and every section and every story gave you that vivid image of what the song was trying to convey. And I honestly, Troy's voice, I could listen to him read the back of a bleach bottle. He has one of them speaking voices. And don't mean to be biased, fellow Geordie here. I just love the kind of interpretations of the story and how each voice helped in creating the different parts of the story. And when he was talking about things such as the imagery and about the fragrance of the perfume of the obese lady who went into the lift, you get that image and you can almost smell that smell of perfume. It took me a long time to kind of grasp that side of Thomas's songwriting. And at 30 years old, I've finally got it, folks. I finally get what those lyrics are all about. And like I said, this song is very telling towards Thomas personally about how he finds himself. And once again, this reoccurring theme of the dead boy, how he uses a lot of imagery about man boys and things like that, where psychologically here, where I personally, speculation, where I feel like Thomas doesn't really identify much with the stereotypical male role model, the and things like that, where he doesn't feel like he belongs as a part of kind of normal human society in behaviours. Oh, I'm so happy I got the chance to get psychological there.
Song of Myself was one of the few songs that I really didn't like at first listen. I'm not sure why that is, coming to think about it now. Maybe the pacing of the song with the poem at the end was a bit jarring to listen to at first. However, now, it's a really beautiful song to listen to, especially the poem at the end, which I understand a lot of people don't always appreciate. I know they don't play it live, obviously, because it's spoken word, or let the track play on live. However, I think the poem is really quite a visual, vivid poem at the end, and I think it's quite, it adds something to the song, and there are some really incredible lines in there where he talks about the old man in the attic and the dog in the alley and the girl in the elevator. Those particular lines really engage all the senses, because you can almost smell or see or hear what's going on in that part of the poem. But for me, I think my favourite line, and the line that's always touched me, is, "Dear child, stop working, go play, forget every rule, there is no fear in a dream." And I think it talks to that imaginarium, this dream world that, you know, Thomas is trying to create, not only with this album, but with the film. There is no fear in a dream. It's a really powerful, powerful line. For me, the most meaningful song, part of the song, is the end. It's the poem that kind of meanders and goes into a variety of different topics. I do have some favourite lines, and for me, there's two sections which are my favourite, which is, "Dear child, stop working, go play, forget every rule, there's no fear in a dream," and, "What's the colour of our lullaby?" I have no idea what that means. It sounds like something a child would ask, and it makes me smile every time I hear it. And there is one other line that makes me smile in a curious way, is, "Careless realism costs souls."
Okay, we've reached the end where I just wrap up everything. So there's a couple things to mention. Live performances. First of all, I am putting Song of Myself on my Dream Nightwish set list, including the spoken word. Thomas, if you just want to play it on a tape, that's absolutely fine. But I want to experience this super loud in an arena, because I love that spoken word outro. One of my favourite things that Nightwish have done. So I would love to see it on my Dream Nightwish set list. But for many people, their Dream Nightwish show was the Showtime Storytime show with Floor, and we did hear Floor give such an amazing delivery of this song. She has such a rawness to her rockier vocals that really came through. And I think that she does this a lot when she takes on Annette songs, in that she brings out that rasp in her voice, which just sounds so incredible. Of course, Annette performed this with the band as well prior to her departure. So it's nice to see that it did get a bit of a look in on the live scene. Whether it's going to be a staple of the set like Ghost Love Score is, and like it seems The Poet and the Pendulum was for a while, I'm not too sure. And that is a shame, but we spoke earlier about it being comparatively underrated compared to the other epics in Nightwish's discography. And I think this comes through in the Nightwish Reddit knockout, where the final placing for Song of Myself was 4th place. And now I know that doesn't sound too bad. How many songs is there? 13 songs. So 4th place out of 13 is not too bad at all. But for what I imagine was created as the centerpiece for the record, it's the grand finale just before the Imaginarium outro. It's really quite a lot lower than I thought it would be. I thought it would at least be in 2nd place. I know when we did Last Ride of the Day how much that's become a beloved Nightwish song. but I really thought this would have been higher. So I'm not going to talk about the other songs because we will discuss them in their own episode. But yeah, I think I would put Song of Myself at least in the top two, potentially my favourite song from Imaginarium. But now we have talked and talked about Song of Myself in this bumper episode, all I have left to say is a huge thank you, first of all, to the amazing guests, to Dan Kumar, to Alan J, to Oha Cade from Valcada. Check them out, they are awesome. And, of course, to Chris, my amazing friend Killishu. Check out his YouTube channel for very honest reviews. He's got a couple videos up there about Evanescence if you're a fan, so go and check that out. Thank you to everyone that has listened throughout this whole series and through this whole mammoth episode. I really do appreciate you. As I said, it's really nice to see the numbers increasing on Spotify, more people subscribing, more people listening. It really does make it worthwhile when you're spending nights and hours on end editing these episodes. It's really nice to see that they are resonating with people and people are enjoying them. Whilst the podcast is having a bit of downtime, you can still reach me on all the social medias. It's Podcast Pendulum on Instagram and Twitter, and just search for the podcast and the pendulum on Facebook and you can find me there. And if you're not already, please do subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. It will be really great to have you on board, and it will mean that you don't miss the episode when I eventually make a return. So this is actually kind of the penultimate episode. There will be a special Off the Elven Path coming soon where we look at the results of the Oceanborn rate. We've been voting on that throughout the whole of this season and we have got a winner. So make sure you tune in and see how we score the songs, which ones come first, which ones come last. I'm sure there'll be a few surprises in there. There certainly was for me when the votes were coming in. Thank you to everyone that's voted in that. Thank you to everyone that sent such a lovely message throughout this season or at any point at all. It really is so much appreciated. And I will be back soon. I'm just going to have a little break and then start preparing season four. And stay tuned to the social medias. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. But until then, stay safe, look after yourselves, wash your hands, and I'll speak to you soon. The Podcast and the Pendulum is not affiliated with Nightwish, Nuclear Blast, or any associated record labels. This is a fan-run podcast, and we upload episodes every Wednesday. Please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.